I would like to talk more today about the opportunity the commissioner's given us. We'll have a few staff members will present information that they work up, so you can see where the future is as far as VMRC. The first slide is a rather deluxe version of all the data in one place, and so importantly, when you see 1990, it means that was the first survey, 1989-90. I was on that survey with Clooney Stagg of Maryland. The next column you see crabs in terms of all ages and males and females. You then see number of juvenile crabs, spawning age crabs. What spawning age means when the dredge survey takes place and is finished in mid-March. Crabs that are 2.4 inches or greater in carapace width, the female crabs, are those that are going to spawn either in late May or in July of August. That's why they're called spawning age. And then you have the harvest, and you have the percentage that are removed from fishing activities alone. That's the exploitation fraction. So you can look at this table as much as you'd like. Many of us have certainly done it to try and figure out all the trends. The situation in the 2013-2014 results is that the total number of crabs is fairly low, 308 million. You can see that as you go back. The number of juvenile crabs is probably around the, I'd say, about the 15th in 25 years. So it's not as low as it was the year before at 111, but nonetheless, it's not even the average amount. But it is a bump up from the previous survey. What's troubling, of course, is what's in red here. Just under 69 million pounds, and the trouble there is a overfished situation once you get below 70 million crabs, and we can also call that a depleted condition because, as you see from the previous year, the harvest was not really responsible for a very high exploitation rate because the target is 25.5% removal. This is below target. And that's been the way for the last 6 years. But what staff talked to at the advisory committee was once something is depleted, some action has to be taken. The situation with the past, you can see 55 million, 61 million, and 53. They're all overfished as well or depleted. The situation, though, is knowledge wasn't there. The science didn't really develop fully until 2006 fishing year. There was a 2005 stock assessment. That was still using different reference points, but at least then the commission knew that 10 and 20% were able to be used as the threshold and target. And it was in 2011 with the most recent stock assessment that the new female-only reference points developed, and those are 70 million is the minimum that you should have as far as a healthy stock, and 215 million, which you may remember actually was exceeded a little bit in 2010, that's the target. So the other thing that CMAQ asked about was, well, we're not really overfishing. This is your overfishing here. No overfishing's going on, and staff's response is, if you think about 37 million pounds for a bay-wide harvest, that's really not making much of a fishery. So, I mean, in the past, in the 80s especially, and even into the very early 90s, Virginia was harvesting that much alone. So I want to show you a little bit about the spawning age abundance. It really has just dipped below the 70 million, which is this red line. And as I said before, there were other years back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where that occurred as well. If you look at the removal rate or the exploitation fraction, you can see that it has been very low for about 6 years. 2007 here was the last year where it was above the target. It was also above what's called the threshold. So overfishing was occurring here. The commission and Maryland Department of Natural Resources stepped in 2008 with a 34% reduction plan. And you can see that there were some responses, but unfortunately, we seem to be, as a management entity, back to where we were. So you can also see, if I can go back for a couple of seconds here, you can see that there was, in 2009, there was a response in harvest. Exploitation rates stayed low. A larger response in harvest in 2010. Exploitation stayed low. And then slowly you see the harvest decline. So today we're really talking about the problem of being with an overfished stock. This is the total abundance. If you look back at that table, staff and Maryland Department of Natural Resources several years ago determined that if you can have above 450 million crabs, total crabs, things are a good fishery, a good exploitation rate. It's at about 450 million crabs. And you can see the years where that has occurred, both in the early 90s and in about 2010 was a good year there. So we're obviously way below that at just above 300 million crabs. The juveniles were also called the age zero abundance. You can see their confidence bands placed on these mean estimates or these average estimates, and you can see that there is a tick up in 2011, but you can follow your own trend line across to realize there are quite a few years in that 25 survey time series which were higher than what we have now with the 198 million juvenile crabs. The important thing to indicate about the juveniles is that we did meet collaboratively, Potomac River Fisheries Commission, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and BMRC, and we met April 30th, and we did outline a strategy for countering, if possible, in a managerial sense, the low abundance, the depleted condition, and that concerned not just looking at what happens right now, but looking at these juveniles and trying to conserve enough juveniles for spawning potential for 2015. So the juveniles are recruiting to fishable size starting in August through October. That means following the overwintering, those are the crabs that are going to have their first spawn, those female crabs. And so there's a conscientious decision by the three jurisdictions to apply conservation to not only the current spawning age crabs, which will now spawn in summer, we're very close to the May time period when they'll spawn the first time, but with any regulations that the commission enacts, the first time you'll have a benefit is during the July-August period. So follow up with that on the juveniles, that's your 2015 spawning event. And I'll come back to that because it was something that was one of the better discussions, I think, that we've ever had. Not in good times as far as the way the abundance of crabs are, but I think the discussion turned out very good among the jurisdictions. When you look at the males, that's certainly a point of concern. This is 25 million age one males. So these are the males that are 2.4 inches or greater in carapace width, and that is actually the lowest of the time series. And the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee does have measures that they are looking at to make sure that there's not a problem here. We do not have a reference point for males yet, like we should probably soon, I hope. And in the meantime, there are ways to look at the ratios of the males and the female 1 pluses to see if there's a real problem. So something to watch in the future, and CBSAC certainly is going to work on that, but there has been a downward trend for the last couple of years in males. This just shows the harvest, and red line is Virginia with the squares, and you can see it varies quite a bit. It certainly has come down since the 2000. You can see the years of problem that led to us asking for disaster relief. You can see it with Maryland as well. Potomac River's down here, relatively flat in the last maybe 12 years. Some very high harvest back in the late 90s. So, you know, again, this is the Virginia average, the red line. You can see that we haven't really reached the average since about 2002. Maryland, pretty much the same way, except for this 2010 point, where I remember in 2009 they had about 29,000 pounds. In 2010 they were up to almost 60, I think it was. So it was a burst up. Gives you a different look at it, and you can see that the Potomac River in black, Maryland in the clear part of the bar, and Virginia yellowed out part of the bar. And, you know, this again is all categories, everything included. You're going to see some data from other staff members that shows for us that the crab pot fishery has been about 95% of the harvest since 2008. And this gives you a tabular view of where things have been since 2005. You can see following 2008 for Virginia that there was some improvement, which unfortunately sort of ended in 2012. And the other thing to look at, which is important for us to look more at the effort, is the peeler fishery. This is mainly peeler crabs, even though it says soft crabs. It's a very small percentage of soft crabs. So it's mostly peeler, but a very low point, as was the hard crab last year. And so here's our total harvest for 2013. That will be important because what the jurisdictions talked about April 30th was, and Maryland in particular said, we need some kind of target. You know, our fishermen really need a target that they can understand. Because we were promoting, the commissioner and staff was promoting, we need to save spawning potential. We need to do anything we can to conserve female crabs and enhance spawning potential. Well, finally, everyone agreed we could do both. Even though the important part is the spawning potential, the 10% is something that is based on 2013. So when you see the options come forward from Joe Grist, you'll understand that it's going to be 10% of this value right here. I think someone else is coming up to join us.
Hi, I'll also introduce myself for those who don't know. My name is Andy Aylin. I got my degree in biology at Christopher Newport University. I've been with VMRC since January of last year. I started as a management reporting technician, and now I'm one of the fisheries management planners. I do have some harvest and effort data for you today. This one here is harvest of blue crabs from crab pots. It's an estimate broken down by male and female. So we have female in red and the male in blue. Any unclassified crabs, so just reported as a general category of blue crab, we looked at the male and female ratio of each month of each year and applied that to those in order to estimate what it would be. And so this really just shows how the female is the predominant harvest for Virginia. Looking at crab pot effort, staff looked at the number of harvest days, so days reported of harvest for crab pots for 2011 through 2013. You can see the number of the days in the season. In 2012 and 13, we had the season extension, so there was 234 days in the season for both males and females. So 0 days is your inactive licenses, so a person that didn't report any harvest on that license. That has slowly increased from 2011 to 12 to 13. And then we've broke down from 1 to 25 days, 26 to 50, 51 to 100, 101 to 150, and then anything greater than 150 days of reported harvest. And you can see that there are less people with harvest greater than 50 days in 2013 than in 2012. So taking that 2013 data, we broke it down into license category. On the legend, the N is the number of active licenses. So your largest license category is the 255 pots, followed by the 85 pots, and then your 425 pot license. And if you recall from the previous table, there's 427 inactive licenses last year. And so the majority of those come from your 85 pot category and your 255 pot category. And then anything from 1 to 100 days doesn't change too much. Greater than 100 days, there's still a large amount of people harvesting. And then there's 34 people last year who had harvested for more than 150 days. And again, there's 234 potential days in that season. Staff also did the same thing for peeler pot, 2011 through 2013. Your number of harvesters eligible for a peeler pot license has hardly changed, but the number of harvesters reporting no harvest, that's your inactive licenses again, has increased, and we're now at 50.5% of the peeler pot industry is inactive. And then just for a comparison, you can see the harvest from peeler pot in 2011, 12, and 13. And then same thing with that data. We broke it down for the number of days with reported harvest, 1 to 10, 11 to 30, 31 to 50, 51 to 100, anything greater than 100. Most of the harvest, regardless of the year, falls between 1 and 30 days. But there's still a large group of people with harvest from 51 to 100 days, and it actually increased in 2013. And then for each year, there was more than 20 people with harvest for greater than 100 days.
These graphs are going to show the data by gear and license category. The first slide is showing the 2008 through 2013 blue crab harvest by gear. The top graph really shows how the crab pot has the highest amount of harvest compared to the rest of the gears. In 2009 to 2013, it accounts for 95% of the harvest. In 2008, it accounts for 91%, and that's partially due to the crab dredge fishery being open that year. The bottom graph shows a zoomed-in view of the other gears excluding the crab pot harvest. And as you can see, the peeler pot gear has the highest amount of harvest compared to the rest of the gears, followed by the crab dredge when it was open in 2008, followed by the crab scrape. This graph shows the 2008 to 2013 blue crab harvest from Virginia by license category. And this shows that the 255 pot category has the highest amount of harvest compared to the rest, followed by the 425 pot category, followed by the 85 pot category. The 255 pot category is showing the highest amount because these amounts are products of the number of harvesters and harvest days. With the 255 pot category, they have the most licensed harvesters in that category, followed by the 85 pot and then the 425 pot category.
Good afternoon. My name is Kelsey Rooks. I also graduated from Christopher Newport University with my degree in biology, and I'm currently a fisheries management technician within the mandatory reporting program. So I'm going to present the pricing survey to you today and discuss a little bit about the responses that we have received. So we mail out a quarterly pricing survey to all licensed Virginia seafood buyers. It is a voluntary survey, so we recognize that the data that we do receive may not be a full reflection of the dockside value. We are looking to increase the participation in the survey so that we have a better understanding of the economic impact. And the prices that we do receive responses on are for all species, not just blue crabs, so I am going to go into a little bit more detail on that specifically later. So looking at the responses for the 2013 pricing survey, if we look at the fourth quarter, you can see that we sent 248 surveys. We had 39 that were returned with usable data, 11 that were returned without data or with unusable data, to give us a response rate of about 20%. Of those surveys that were returned, we looked at the species-specific responses, and specifically we pulled out the number of responses for crabs and oysters, as overall that was what we were seeing as the highest responses. The total line in red is very similar to the trend line that you see in the green, which represents the number of crab responses. So to actually look at the dollar value, this is a chart of the 2003 through 2013 average dockside bushel price for your market categories, jimmies, peelers, sooks, and number ones. If you look at 2008 and 2013, we know that the amount of harvest was similar for both of those years, but you can see that the prices vary quite a bit here. It was lower in 2008, and we see that spike in 2013. Okay, and this chart just takes that a step further. This is actually looking at the price per pound rather than per bushel. The blue line is the total Virginia harvest for all of blue crabs. The red is the dockside value. And on the y-axis, you can see that the numerical value corresponds to both the pounds and the dollar amount. So if we look at 2008, you can see that both the harvest and the dockside value was a little below 20 million. And if you look at 2013, you can see that the harvest was still below 20 million, but the actual value was closer to 25 million. And again, this is, the survey is something that we are looking to get a greater participation in. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think y'all remember me. All right. I get to present the real fun news. So we have management options that we want to send out for a public hearing, and Rob's going to go through the final recommendation at the end of this. But what we're looking at is management options that would start July 5th of this year and possibly carry through to July 4th of next year, basically almost like a fishing season approach to this. We're doing this for a couple of things. One, we have the current amount of spawning females. Would be good if some of them get some extra protection in the second half of this year. The other thing is to get our juveniles, which will start entering the fishery in August, September, to actually preserve some of them to become part of the spawning class for next year. So it's kind of a little bit of a two-part approach here. And it's all aimed at female crab harvest. We're trying to actually achieve a 10% reduction in female crab harvest. But to do that, you actually have an impact on total crab harvest. So currently, you know, we're working off our 2013 harvest amount, which is a little under 18 million pounds. We want to reduce female harvest by 10%. So that reduction goal for female harvest is we're trying to reduce by 1.3 million pounds in female harvest. Our current bushel limits are on the bottom of the slide. So this is where we are now. So this is our baseline that we're moving forward. This baseline was created last year for the 2014 season when we had our crab extension and we went through all our options last October. So that from 85 crab pods, which is at 16 bushels, to the 425 crab pods, which is at 55 bushels, that's our baseline. We're working down from there. Management options. Each one of these options, and these are just four. There could be some combination down the road that ends up coming up. But these are just four options that we're looking at this point. They range from options like options one and two that include a female closure, female crab harvest closure starting November 16th, and have various ways of looking at the bushel limits both before and after that closure. One is to separate them into basically two separate periods, the July 5th, the November 15th period, and then the March 17th to the July 4th period, and looking at those proportionally how much they contribute to harvest. The other way is kind of a more of a constant approach. Is you still have the female harvest closure on November 16th, but you want your bushel limits before and after to be the same. A little bit more of a simple approach. It's better for the harvesters. You're not having to tell them a bunch of different values throughout the season. What season am I in? What value am I supposed to be for my bushel limit? It's a little simpler approach. Options three and four. In options three and four, there is not a female crab harvest closure starting November 16th. We do keep the female harvest open to November 30th, but there, through an industry member recommendation from CMAQ, is instead half the current bushel limits just during that 15-day period, and then factor in what arch of the bushel limits be before and after to match up that. Now, option three, you're talking about a November 16th through November 30th female closure. I'm sorry, November 16th through November 30th halving of the current. Option four, though, is a little different. We're shifting it to next spring. So instead of doing it in November, do it March 17th through March 31st. And what impact would that have? So it's a lot of little variable ways of looking at this. Trying to all of these are to achieve the 10% reduction. Okay, so it just depends on which way you want to go. So I'm going to walk through two of them briefly just so you can see how it's working out with the math. Option two, which was where we were staying, we want the bush elements to basically be the same from July 5th of this year to July 4th of next year with the female harvest closure, November 16th through November 30th. So our current limits are on the left. In the middle column, actually, 16 through 55. And then the constant one would be anywhere from the 9, which is for the 85 crab pots, up to 48 for the 425 crab pots. Now, I will point out those do seem low, but last year when we went through all these options on variability of bushel limits, we were also working with an industry standard, a range of what is a good day and what is an exceptional day in the fishery. All these values come up to at or just above the good day, which is a bushel every 10 pots. The exceptional was a bushel every 5 pots. So we're still within the industry's suggested range that we were working with last year. So with that, we're looking at overall savings just from the crab pot change of 1.4 million pounds overall, or a little over 1 million just in females. We gained 257,000 pounds of projected savings if we closed the fishery from November 16th to November 30th. So when you added this all up, you get with this option at the very bottom, a 1.3 million pound savings, which is at 1,325,000 compared to 1,314,000, which is what we're trying to achieve. So it comes up pretty close. You never can hit the mark exactly with bushel limits. These are all based on projections, but we try and get as close as we can. The other option, just to show, this is the one, this is option three, which is instead of having the female closure November 16th, November 30th, we replace that with the halving solution, taking the current bushel limits and putting them exactly in half during just that time period, and then working out what the bushel limits would be before and after that time period, just as we've done before. So with that option there, you're able to keep your female harvest going until November 30th. Here you can see how the bushel limits would vary. 85 crab pot gets the least amount of variability, goes from 9 to 8 to 9. Your 425 crab pot, though, would drop. It would start at 45. It would drop to 26 for those last 15 days of November and then be back up to 47 starting March 17th to July 4th. With that, we get a savings also very close to what we had before, 1,325,000 comparable to the 1,314,000 we're trying to achieve.
I'll offer a little context here because it's not familiar territory, but the situation is that there's an interest initially by the commissioner and staff to help the spawning in 2015. Those are the juveniles now. Those are the ones that will spawn the first time. After that, it became pretty apparent in our meeting with the other jurisdictions that we really have something that's awkward in terms of management flexibility, because we do have the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey. The results have come out as early as April the 7th back in 2008, and now it's end of April, early May before the results are available. So each year, everyone's waiting for the results from the Winter Dredge Survey, and as you can see, for example, absent maybe some type of an emergency, it'd be very difficult for the commission to have the background and to have enough time to make decisions with the way things are set up. So we did talk among the jurisdictions to set a new management framework, which would essentially run from summer to summer. That means when the winter dredge survey results roll in, let's just say early May of 2015, the commission can make adjustments. In fact, we were asked that question at CMAQ, why not wait till the 2015 dredge survey results before you worry about measures in 2015? The answer is the same thing that always happens. We could be stuck if we just wait. So options you hear today are to really be enjoyed by the other bay jurisdictions as well. That's what we're all moving towards. The other thing I want to tell you is usually I read a lot that tells me what the code says when I receive letters. So I thought I'd read something here from 282203.1 Blue Crab Fishery Management Plan. And part of this section indicates the plan shall be designed to reverse any fishing practices, environmental stress, and habitat deterioration negatively impacting the short and long-term viability and sustainability of the blue crab stock in Virginia waters. So the debate over whether harvest is responsible or environment really is not significant when you look through that fishery management plan. And the other thing is, if you look at that table one again, you will see that you can watch as things have started to deteriorate a bit with the abundances following 2010, 2011. And that's just the nature of variability, but you can also see that the harvest regime is way down. What I'd like to do is also remind you we met with the Crab Management Advisory Committee and had two meetings, and the last meeting when we met was a week in advance of this meeting, and they did have a motion which you'll see up here later on, and Joe Christ already showed you what their motion was. It was to have a halving of the bushel limits November 16th through 30th instead of having the closure to the female harvest. There was certainly lots of dialogue the last meeting. We had about a three-hour meeting. I think it became promising to some extent because several members indicated they want to plan for 2015, and staff said, if you want to plan for 2015, then you know we'll be here to assist you. But in essence, only that one motion did arise from that meeting. So the staff recommendation is for an advertisement for June public hearing of options that will reduce female crab harvest by at least 10%. And in addition, staff requests an advertisement of the CMAQ alternative to a November 16 to 30 prohibition on the harvest of female crabs. And this is the halving of that two-week period's bushel limits. So male and female crabs would be allowed. It would just be half of the typical bushel limits those last 2 weeks. For any of these options or alternatives, and Joe started to mention this a little bit too, you can have a mix of these options I'm going to read to you so that you do end up with the 10% reduction in female harvest based on 2013. So our alternatives based on the options below, the reduction shall be no less than 10% of the 2013 female harvest of crabs. The basis for this reduction is to conserve spawning potential, and the overriding concern is the current depleted state of this resource. So staff recommends that the current 2014 bushel limits constructed in 2013, we wanted to make sure you understand we do have current bushel limits. They'll be in effect until at least July 5, depending on what the commission does, or longer, depending on what the commission does. So they should be lowered to account for the 10%, and they can account for 10%. That can be the two discrete steps, where one limit is July 5 through November 15, 2014. Male harvest would continue through the 30th, but female harvest would not. And March 17, 2015 through July 4th would be the rest where the bushel limits would be lowered. Lower the current bushel limits from July 5 to July 4, 2015, but there would be a prohibition on female crabs, and that would be the last 2 weeks of November, and that can also achieve the reduction. So depending on what the commission ends up adopting, it just means that you either take away or add bushel limits in certain parts of the year. The lower the bushel limits from July 5 through July 4, 2015, without a November 2014 female closure to female crabs, or a halving of the bushel limit, but the female crab harvest would continue. So it would be the same harvest regime we've had. And I know there's been a continuation of the December harvest in 2012-13, but we'll talk about that in a second. So instead of having a halving of bushel limits in November, this option would have the bushel limits in March, March 17th through 31st. And this was actually recommended by Ty Farrington, who's on the Crab Management Advisory Committee and the industry panel. And I thought it worth bringing forward because there have been a lot of concern about what happened in 2012 when we went from about 800,000 or 900,000 pounds to 2.5 million pounds, and the effort doubled at the same time. So, you know, I thought that was a good recommendation. We're bringing it forward to ask for advertisement. There should be no reopening of the 2014-15 winter crab dredge fishery season. That was provided to CMAQ. There was not a lot of discussion about that at all. And in addition, there would be no season extension as in 2012-2013 into December. Again, the depleted status of the resource is the reason for that.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, staff. Questions, comments from the commission?
Yeah.
Mr. Close.
Rob, how many times did they reach their limits, like on pot limits, over the period of the summer per day?
We don't know yet because, again, what happened was, as a little background, in 2013, there were bushel limits, but they were set just to account for the expected increase in harvest in December, and I think it was 159,000 pounds. So all that was done with bushel limits was to accommodate that 159,000 pounds. Later on, and introduced in October 27th of 2013, are the current bushel limits. They are nothing close to what was done in 2013. These are the ones where we asked industry to give us advice on what they thought a good crab day was, for example, and then they were done in a systematic way. If you remember Joe Grist informing everyone last October on how they were created, essentially all the fluff, all those harvests which were unrealistic, were cut out. So we haven't had a chance to know yet. They will, you know, they just started March 17th, those new bushel limits.
Right. I mean,
I know what your question is. I know what your question is. I called four members of CMAQ before I distributed this information to them, and a couple of those conversations were prolonged. There was unhappiness definitely in one conversation because that person felt that by summer, the lower bushel limits were going to impact him. He was going to have to lay off his cull boy, and it was not a happy conversation for a 255 pot. That's the only feedback I have until we actually look at the bushel limits in action.
Only question I have is how many pots is everybody fishing to try to achieve their bushel limits? You know, and even if they fish more pots and don't come nowhere near the limits they have now, how will this be a 10% reduction?
Well, the 10% reduction is a number from 2013. But the 10% reduction gets applied to the bushel limits as if we can't quite tell you whether this is going to be as poor as 2013, better than 2013, or where it will be. But chances are, if we had 111 million juveniles in 2013 and we have 198 in 2014, I would say that the late summer fall is going to be better. And that reduction gets applied into there right through 2015. So again, the other thing to think about is this is not an average bushel limit. This is not where you take everyone's harvest and just take the middle. You know, this is actually based on performance. We've looked at 2009, 2010, 2011. We've looked at all the years after 2008. So the chances are there's going to be, it's going to fall somewhere within that realm. It's not going to be another 2010. It's not going to be another 2011. It could be another 2009. If you look at the data from 2009 and look at our harvest, which went up about 35% from 2008, which was about as low as we are now. So, you know, we do have all those discussions about the data. Okay? Can't give you what you exactly want. I understand that. Close. We have to let these bushels in this truck.
Mr. Tankard.
My question is, you know, we've concentrated on females for a long time. And that was part of our strategy in 2008, obviously. Is there something we're missing here? I mean, the males are part of the reproductive cycle. And are maybe, in fact, too many males depleted from our bay to make for a spawning situation that's favorable to the resource.
My understanding is that this is sort of a open question. It's been going on for years as to whether there's a problem with insemination or not. And I know Tuck Hines from the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center has put out papers on that. Others have done different work. Old Dominion University just about 3 years ago made a presentation, one of Dr. John McConaughey's PhD students, that indicate there were incomplete fertilization and multiple partners and all sorts of things. So I think this remains open with CBSAC. This came up in the dialogue that I saw with getting ready for this advisory report. I think it's something to think about. I think that's why staff wanted to point out 25 million males, age 1 plus males, is a low point. And what does that mean? But as far as the female crab conservation, I think we saw some benefits. We haven't really changed the regulations too much. I think the other night at CMAC there was a question as to whether we had, but really we pushed back the closing of the sanctuary from May 1 to May 16. You know, that was one measure we did. You know, but in general, the regime has been the same for the commission more or less since 2008. And it showed dividends. They got better. And then 2012 and 2013 have been poor as far as the harvest goes.
And I think that's the perfect time to make the point here, is what we're looking at here is not an overfishing stat. It's, right. There's the exploitation rate is below the target. The harvest is down. This is not a matter of taking too many crabs. This is environmental conditions. And I don't think the chief mentioned, but Maryland's mortality rate for cold kills over the last winter was 28.4% of all adults. So almost a third of all the crabs in Maryland waters that were adults died because of the cold. This is what we're looking at here. It's not a matter of the watermen taking too many crabs. We have to manage around in Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. And Mother Nature has dealt us two bad years in a row. That's my perspective.
I guess it's a matter of, do you really want to have a fishery bay-wide that is harvesting 37 million pounds? So somewhere in your evaluation, you'll find that the science here is not complex. It's whatever the harvest is and whatever your abundance is, and then that's how you get your exploitation target. But I think the two things that staff's been thinking about is, one, that's not a very good fishery for commercial or recreational fishermen to have low abundance. And if you see it a couple of years, then you start to make plans. So I think that's something that sticks out in our minds, is that we are paying attention to the fact that if you could have higher abundance by your actions, that means you can have higher harvest, but you can still not be overfishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a scalar, mathematical scalar.
Mr. Erskine.
Rob, I just have a question, and I'm not really sure it pertains necessarily to the options or, you know, that kind of stuff, but I'm just curious about, has there been research on ecosystem management for the crab fisher? I mean, where are they on, you know, predation mortality? We can speak to the harvest, and that's pretty easy to get a handle on, but what about, can you speak to the predation?
I asked about this morning again. I was thinking about that this morning. The natural mortality rate, which includes predation, is probably 3.5 times what the fishing mortality or the exploitation rate is, or thereabouts. And because of that, you really don't know when it changes. So, for example, if we've had an influx of red drum for 3 years, is that 0.9 really 0.9? Or if striped bass have not been as abundant, is that point that they were 2011, let's say, is that 0.9 still 0.9? So it is sort of an unknown that way. And it ecosystem-wise, there was a Chesapeake Bay effort probably 3 years ago, EBFM, Ecosystem-Based Fisheries Management, and blue crab was one of the species, and they'd gone through an elaborate dashboard, they called it a dashboard profile of blue crab, all the kind of things that would trigger actions and things of that. And I did hear that mentioned again recently. Apparently funding ran out on that project, but you know, that was the last time I know they really tried to get some ecosystem approach to it.
Mr. Close.
So if we go with another 10% reduction than what we had in 08, so we're cutting back our percentage by 40%, and we're still at the same levels we are now before 08. Am I correct?
Well, I think what happens is, and we talked about this, if you're in 2008, going into 2008, we've got to go backwards now, and you take a 34% reduction, it's just on that harvest. You're just cutting that harvest that year. If you move to 2009, the abundance is higher, the harvest can be higher. You've lost the 34% as a number, but what you've gained are the management options that you put in place to reduce that harvest. And now it's just a matter of how abundance ebbs and flows, like it has since 2008, how harvest changes up and down, because one thing that is in that big table I gave you, it's very possible when there were 800 and 900 million total crabs that overfishing was actually going on because the harvest was too great even for that amount of fishing. So it's not an additive. Whatever happened in the past doesn't add in to now. We're taking the 10% on a very weak year and saying we want to ensure that we put it towards conservation of female crabs. You could say take 20%. You could say take 30%. I think the jurisdictions agreed that 10% was what we would do, although, you know, DMRC's stance was we want to do what we can to take care of the juveniles as well. You know, that's been sort of indirect. There hasn't been this approach before. We closed October 26th, in 2008 to female harvest. Then for a few years we closed November 21st. But it wasn't done with the intention of trying to promote all the way into the following season some savings of juveniles that are now, they're mature. By the time you get to that end of this year, they're mature.
Still, aren't we getting a 40% reduction? No?
No. I don't think you are getting a 40% reduction because you're resetting the abundance. The abundance gets reset. If the abundance was constant and the harvest was constant, I think you'd get a 40%. Well, we see that isn't so. So, for example, we took reductions from 1994 through 2007. In 2001, 2000, we actually quantified what those reductions were. They aren't there today, what we did back then.
I guess long and short of things is I mean, when you took the 34% reduction in the 08, then you upped the effort, so now we're right back to square one, right back to where we are now. Am I correct?
Well, I think if you're looking at abundance levels, it would not be inaccurate to say that in a lot of ways we're in the same place we were from overall total abundance. And the adult age females are very similar to what we were looking at in 2008, as were the juvenile rates. And if you go back to the winter dredge history, survey history, it does indicate from a numbers standpoint, we're near the same position that we were in 2008, where we did enact a 34% harvest reduction. That really was, as Rob explained, a one-year thing. I think what we're looking at here now is different than what we saw back in 2008. Back in 2008, the harvest controls were not as robust as they are now. The harvest that we're seeing now is within the targeted removal rate, and we hadn't seen that before 2008. And here we are at a point now in 2014 where we have daily bushel limits and we have management regimes that can be effective to make sure we don't get into the terrible position we were from overfishing at excessive rates way back when. So to that end, I'd say that while the numbers look similar, we're in a vastly different position than we were 7 years ago.
And if I may follow a little bit. So, Mr. Close, you indicated the effort has increased. If the effort has increased, it's only been by unknown extra pots, because, and we can show the effort next time. We have slides that show the number of eligible crabbers, the number that are licensed, and then the number that are active. And I think one of the presentations showed you, at least for the peeler pot fishery, that only half are active. When you look at the crab pot fishery over the years, it's been pretty constant since 2003, that probably two-thirds are active. So now we talk about the extra effort that fishermen take, crabbers take, to ensure that they do what you had said earlier, that they're making sure they double up to get their bushels. But I think this all falls down to relying a little bit on trying to get some extra spawning, because if the commission does not, then to be in this situation next year, and this was all the jurisdictions, you know this, to be in the same situation next year and not have tried to conserve spawning potential, that's a real problem, even if the environment has something to do with it. And there have been there have been about a third of the years where winter kill was pretty substantial, one time 40%.
Yes, sir, Erskine.
I have one more question, Rob. How confident are you how reliable do you feel the winter dredge survey is? It seems to me that, and I didn't realize, I thought effort had gone down, if I understood, correctly. Maybe I'm wrong, but if effort's going down and we see the number of juveniles, nearly 200 million crabs, I guess I just see a lot of inconsistencies in some of that data. It could be that you have recruitment to the fishery, but you're not seeing that in maturing to the harvest. And it seems to be a mystery why, with less effort, why that would be.
Yes, thank you. This sounds like instant replay from October. 581 million juvenile crabs coming out of the previous survey, and when you plot it out, not very many made it into the harvest. And I think that is problematic. It's the first time that I know of that there's been such a pronounced disconnect between the abundance and the harvest. And it does call for other independent measures of abundance. So, for example, prior to the winter dredge survey, along about 2003 or 4, perhaps, being the marquee survey, you had a trawl survey from VIMS, you had a trawl survey from Maryland, and you had a peeler pot survey from Calvert Cliffs. CBSAC is trying to get that information up and going again, because they may not be as representative as having 12 to 1,500 stations bay-wide, like the winter dredge survey, but they might be able to supply some of the information that's needed at certain times of the year. And that needs to be something CBSAC works on, and I think they will.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Packard.
My quick question again on with regard to that winter dredge. I mean, our winter was a colder one this year. Things came out of the earth more slowly. In my business, flowers, plants, etc. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me that also probably things come out of the mud at a later date. And we also saw, and if my memory serves me, with our crab dredge exploration and scientific work last year, that crabs moved in the winter. And do you think that the crab survey should be more water temperature oriented as opposed to calendar oriented? Is there something to be accounted for with regard to that?
I think, Mr. Tankard, you raised a couple of good points. There was also, and I'm trying to grab the memory, but there was that year where the decisions were that perhaps the crabs had already moved out to Carolina, and that's why we had a falling down on the spawning stock. I think the winter dredge survey pays attention to the temperature indirectly, whether it likes it or not, because of the personnel that have to man it. But what I was thinking about while you were talking was it might be good to sort of get a profile of what went on in a winter dredge survey. What they, you know, I don't know what kind of a log they keep or a record, but I know one thing we talked about, again, to go back to the Bay jurisdictional meeting, was starting to share our information a little bit more, mm-hmm. and that would be a good thing to do. There used to, and there is actually, it was decided also at that meeting there would be a write-up of the winter dredge survey, which has not been a formal write-up as such for quite a while. It used to be with the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee that there were proposals each year for funding that had to have a write-up for that survey. And NOAA funded that survey for many, many years. And once NOAA stopped funding it, the proposals went away, and other funding had to be sought. So I think you bring up a good issue.
Anything else? I believe there's some members of the public here that would like to speak on this. Mr. Smith.
My name's Ken Smith. Really hadn't even planned on speaking today, but then when I started going, I heard some comments that it kind of prompted me to say something. I don't think people realize just how bad the crab fishery is right now. I think the watermen realize it more than the commission realizes it. But there were some issues that were brought up here today, and Mr. Erskine brought one up about the winter dredge survey and how accurate it is. You were on this side of the rail when this came up, and I think, Mr. Tankard, you were the only one commissioner that was on it, but I don't know if you all remember Lee Ann Washington made a presentation here, and boy, she really shook things up one time. And she showed a chart on a PowerPoint presentation where when the fishing was low, the exploitation came down low, that the crab harvest, the winter dredge survey the next year was low, but when things were actually overfished, we had an abundance of crabs the following spring. And that was about 50% of the time. And so she made the comment, oh, man, she caught it from Commissioner Bowman and a few other people. But she says this goes to prove that overfishing is good for the fishery, which, like I say, she – but the The thing is, it's not consistent, which you're talking about.
Tell you.
Oh, we've got a kind of a, to talk about the watermen and how we feel as though things are probably bad. There are several of us, I say several of us, there are probably 20 of us in an email thing where we constantly are discussing industry. And when I was coming down here today, this is an email that I got, and I'm just going to pick up part of it, and I'm going to try to keep the language presentable where it's, you know, I got to be smarter than the phone. This smartphone's killing me. If you'll bear with me for just a minute. When the Potomac decided to put tags on pots, we had no option. And for one, I think that was a good thing. People with 1,200 crab pots, I think you're trying to address that, Mr. Close, had to have a tag for each pot, and they could only have 475 pots maximum, which helped take the pressure off crabs. The crab industry isn't a blank place right now, with very low population of crabs. And if people don't get their blank off their shoulders and look out for the overall crab population, then we will be out of a job. We need drastic measures now to see that we all have a job in 10 or 15 years. It's not going to be beneficial to anyone beginning, but in the long run, we will all benefit. The peelers and the sponge crabs need to be dealt with now. We have people right now home that have 400 to 500 peeler pots out in the water, and there's no law presence. I mean, these are things that, and I know we've discussed this, the law presence. I mean, I know that's a problem. And I think what you were trying to get to about the bushel limits, and I think when Rob was saying an exceptional day and a good day, I think this goes to maybe this overfishing. And it is overfishing going on there by a certain amount of crabbers. In one crab industry panel meeting, a young crabber sat there and said, they're going to put pots out and they're going to put pots out until they catch their limit. He says, if you try to stop them, they're going to get you. He says, if you try to do anything about it, he said, they will kill you. And I mean, I think he was probably just as, maybe a little overdramatic, but if you knew the bunch he was talking about, I think that there was some truth there. And I think that's what Jimmy Dean's trying to say, that bushel limits aren't going to, the crabbers wouldn't catch their limits probably right now, but they are. Some out there, they're going to keep putting pots out and keep putting pots out until they do catch it. I'm not opposed or against. I know we got to do something. And I mean, this is, we just got to do something. But management from 208, and again, I think this is what Jimmy Dean's trying to say, that it's a 40% yield from 208, and we did these things, and we hadn't improved. You know, we're at a point now that we've got to do something and do something different than what we have been doing. You know, I think this industry panel's working on things, you know, to do that. But this it is overfishing. You talk about reducing crabs in the fall, not catching crabs in the fall. Maybe we ought to think about maybe the springtime where we got these sponge crabs out there. Maybe that's the time when we need to be having reductions so that they come out. And in the fall, I mean, you went there and said the winter kill. So what are we going to do? Stop you from catching them in the fall and then have them subjected to a winter kill? I mean, there a lot of questions to be had here, but I really do think it's time that we've got to start thinking about different management plans and how we enforce what we're doing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Mullis.
I hate to have them come up behind the camera. That's just making the job.
I'm Bill Mullis, and I'm chairman of the Virginia Blue Crab Industry Panel. And I just want to thank the commission for allowing us to do what we're doing, and I thank the staff because we've had a very close relationship with staff and the scientific community that we're pretty proud of, because I feel like our rapport together as an industry and management is way better than it was several years ago. But I've got some recommendations from the panel, but I want to speak in general just for a second. One thing that I see, and I do have some fishery management experience. I was in the scallop fishery in 1990. It was one of the worst fishery disasters in this country. It's now the most valuable fishery in the world. I've been in it 24 years. I was part of the team that built the management plan. We went to every meeting in New England, and we were also part of the fishermen that executed our own plan. Our fishery was so bad that we went to New England Fishery Management Council, and we pleaded for help. The fishery management plan we put in was so severe that the government told us, we don't think you may not make it through this particular management plan. We looked at the managers and we said, guess what? Without it, we know we won't make it anyway. So I'm just going to urge everybody, let's not let the crab population get out of hand before we really look at what we're doing. The first thing that I think from my experience, not because I know anything, but I've been exposed to a lot of fishery management over the years, is I think our whole mindset about approach and management is somewhat out of tempo. And the problem we've got is we're managing the harvesters, but we're not managing the crab stock. You have to manage the biomass, not particularly the fishermen, in a sense that it'll affect the fishermen, but somebody really has to look at the biomass first. And so I just think we need a different mindset, a little bit of different, what I would say is a more open-minded thought process in how we're approaching crab management. I agree with what Ken said. You know, I crab dredged for years. I'm one that paid the ultimate sacrifice already. I had a crab dredge boat that was probably one of the finest in the state. I've been 6 years out of the fishery now, and I've seen no gain. So my sacrifice was, for me, I've seen no payoff for anybody. The other crabbers in the room, staff, anybody, I don't see the numbers up here that prove that it was effective. So I made 100% sacrifice in my segment to the fishery to find out there was no return for anybody from my sacrifice. So it was a poor investment. I don't see why we should close crabs in the fall from the 16th to 30th to November. You need to close crabbing in the spring for a two-week period when the mortality rate is highest and it's all busted cushions, crabs with 2 million eggs apiece on them. And I said it before, it should be pretty easy to figure out how to save some crabs. Tell me the survival rate of a cushion crab that isn't sterile, and we know that can be a part of the jimmies is coming into this. Tell me the average survival rate. Tell me how many female cushions I need to save. It's simple math. If the survival rate's 5% and you want 5 million crabs, maybe you need to save 50,000 crabs, or maybe you need to save 100,000 crabs that have that potential to have the spawn. So I think saving the crabs, we need to look at when we're saving them and when are they going to be the most valuable to contribute back to the biomass. Crabs saved in November, there's no guarantee if you want to talk about winter crab kill. But one thing I do want to remind y'all is we had much colder winters in the past when this state had tremendous crab populations. And I'm not sure anybody in this room has hands-on experience in this crab fishery to visually know in their eyes and their mind what the crab fishery used to look like in the state of Virginia. I do. I crab potted out of Newport News Boat Harbor in the 80s with 350 crab pots. Most of the time, you couldn't sell them all. We crab dredged in the winter with huge fleets of boats, and the biomass of crabs that laid in Chesapeake Bay was absolutely beyond your current imagination, trust me. Rob, you probably remember some of it, and I'm not picking on your age, but I'm nearly 60. You know, when you look at Dr. Russell and you think about oysters, you know, how many spat on shell projects and how many small baby oysters have they released in the bay to revive the oyster population? They didn't do it by saving the oysters that were dying. They did it by having new oysters introduced. So to me, somebody's got to think about cushion crabs and how many of those crabs are going to the market. Last year,
a few years ago, and I saved newspaper articles. After we closed the dredge fishery, I saw a newspaper article about crabbing, and the picture in the article was all busted sooks. And I'm looking at the picture thinking, how in the world does anybody ever think we're going to have crabs when you keep sending the pregnant mothers to the market? Somebody's got to manage this crab fishery as a biomass, not particularly through harvest all the time. Somebody's got to think a little differently. If you're going to save something that's going to produce more crabs. You know, and we've got no measures really for male crabs. Recently, we went to Colonial Beach and spent an afternoon and met with the Maryland Watermen's Group, with their Watermen's President and Watermen throughout Maryland. And we agreed on some things. They're concerned about the male crab population, and we are too. We also learned that a crab can be cushioned and be sterile. So we've got the same kind of thought process that Mr. Tankard mentioned, that, you know, we're really starting to get concerned about the male side of the species. Is there enough males to really take care of this female population and this biomass be viable? So there's some concerns there. We haven't heard anything mentioned about enforcement or reporting. And, you know, and I know the recreational, at least the effort in the recreational fishery is up some. But our crab management plan reminds me of bad stock. We bought in it in 08. You thought you were going to get a return on your investment when it spiked 1 year. But if you didn't sell out that year, it's right back where we started. So it was a bad promise, wasn't it? I see the same promise today being offered in crab management. Let's have a bushel limit, of which nobody's catching anyway if they're operating legally. So what's it going to mean? So I really challenge everybody in this room to put your thinking cap on and start thinking differently about crab management. And I don't think you've got a lot of time to waste. This crab population is in worse trouble than you think. Predation's tremendous. But I also know back, let's say in the 70s, when we had a huge crab population, we also had a huge fish population in Chesapeake Bay. And I think it goes hand in hand. We don't see as many fish as we used to see in the bay. We don't have as many crabs as we used to see in the bay. So maybe the fish aren't here because the crab population isn't here to feed on. But there's something has certainly changed. And again, I'd just say it looks like a bad investment, because we've got the same promise today that this is going to help. But it didn't help since 2008. So anybody that bought into it sure didn't get a return, did they? So my next warning is, if you keep doing business the same way you've been doing it, don't expect to see any changes. You're not going to see it. It's not going to happen. It's not just not going to fall out of the sky like some miracle. Even though we can pray for that, it's simply not going to happen. You all, your records and what you're looking at, those charts should show that what's happened has been fairly ineffective, because we're the exact same place we were 6 years ago. We haven't done anything. So we've stayed here and stalled around 6 years, believing our own promises to each other. They make us feel good. It's great to print it in the newspaper, but they're not effective. If they were, you'd see it on your chart. So I personally think peeler potting is decimating the entire crab population in Chesapeake Bay. If you look at how many peelers have been caught recently and the size of them, it's unbelievable. And there's a huge mortality in shedding crabs. I know that myself. It's not unusual for some of these people to lose half of them. So I think we really need to rethink this thing together. And like I said, I think we need to... Managing the harvesters is the only thing we can do effectively, but our thought process approaching that is wrong, I believe. And I may be the dumbest guy in the room, and I probably am. But like I said, I participate in some of the best fishery management plans in the world today, and I know what the thought process was to build the stock back. It was protect the spawning biomass. It was a simple formula. Somebody's got to let crabs have more survival rate, and how can we do that? What's the first approach to say we're going to have more crabs? And I've said it before, and I'll say it in front of any of the watermen, because it doesn't make any difference. If nobody does anything, they're going to struggle to be in business. So you can make them mad and save them, or you can do nothing and they're going to be mad because you didn't save them anyway. So it's a double-edged sword.
But I'm saying if you want some time to pull all the rigs out of water, pull it out of water in the spring when everybody's got a boatload of busted soot, that it's quite obvious you don't need education to see 2 million eggs on the crab. And whatever that survival rate is raw math. So if you want to be effective, save a crab when it's closer to be guaranteed some benefit. The rest of it's a bad investment. So I really, really think people need to approach this a little differently. And all of that you just heard is not necessarily the crab panel. That's me as an individual talking. So I kind of wear two hats, and I do struggle. Y'all wouldn't believe, if you think y'all have contentious thought process, come to the crab panel meetings and watch the watermen themselves argue about this stuff. Because it can be fairly contentious, and everybody wants to protect their style of fishing. And I can understand that. But I do think we've got a couple of problems. We're harvesting our female crabs that are egg-bearing, and we're sending them to market, and we're not getting the benefit of the eggs. And we have a sanctuary in the bay that gives the females that do have a chance to rub off and have those eggs, but then all those baby crabs go ashore, and that's the nursery, and the nursery is totally unprotected, and it's being robbed. So all of our babies are leaving the bay in peeler pots and little one-inch mesh wire. I've got 5 peeler pots myself, and I looked at them the other day. One of them trapped a squirrel in my yard, and so I had let the squirrel out, and I looked at the little mesh, and I thought, no wonder. And I had some crab pots next to it, and I thought, man, these peeler pots are really bad. But it's not my story. I know a lot of older watermen around the state, and I have interviewed many, many, many people from Chincoteague down through North Carolina all the way to Wan Chees and all over the place, and go ask 10 old-timers what happened to the crabs in Chesapeake Bay, and I'll guarantee you 7 to 10 are going to say peeler pots. They're going to say that's what introduced the big change. And what increased the effort in peeler potting is when the scientists came up with the idea how to put floats and shedding operations in your backyard. That's when peeler potting really took off. Because prior to that, you had to basically have a piece of waterfront property with floats in the creek for a shedding operation. Now you can find a shedding operation up in Richmond on Route 360 on the way in the city, a big one. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I just really think people need to look at this a little different, and somebody's going to have to do something different. The chart proves it. It's not working. I mean, we've got the same results. So our industry panel's got some recommendations. I think y'all are eventually going to have to move away from a input control fishery, particularly if it can't be enforced. And I know, you know, not for a fact, but I got a pretty good notion that there are people that catch their limit each day, and there's people that catch 2 limits a day, and there's people that have 1,500 crab pots in Chesapeake Bay right now. They've got 4 men on a boat. I had a 24-foot Carolina skiff come in my creek yesterday morning in Gloucester County off Ware River, 3 men on a 24-foot skiff. He had 48 pots in the creek, and he fished them in less than 30 minutes. And that man fished for 4 hours yesterday in the Ware River vicinity. I watched him. So somebody's got to explain to me how many pots he had overboard on a 255 license. Something's wrong. And there was a rig off Matthews County recently, a big boat from Eastern Shore, had 4 men on deck. You don't need 4 men to fish 300 crab pots. You can do it with 2 men. So if you really open your eyes and you see what's going on, you know, some of it's pretty common knowledge. All you got to do is kind of be a little bit of observant, and you're wondering, why is a guy going to hire 4 men to fish 255 crab pots? How can he afford it? He's not. I talked to his cousin in Chincoteague. His cousin told me he had 1,500. So we can tag crab pots. They tag lobster pots all up and down the coast. I've got 800 lobster pots in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. I've got 800 lobster pot tags. It's that simple. People will cheat the system, but there's ways to catch them. It's that simple. So I think we need to, there's a lot of options that somebody's going to have to look at in the future, and one of them is going to be taking a hard-nosed approach at limiting gear somehow, even if it's tags, and we learn how it cheats. They cheat, and law enforcement learns how to catch them cheating, and then we learn how to improve that system. but there's ways to do it. And with this handout I gave y'all, you know, we've got some recommendations to establish a pilot output program that would base a future management plan basically on bushels. Y'all want X amount of bushels harvested. The watermen are awarded X amount of bushels. They catch them when they want, and they're done. It's that simple. It's like a rockfish tag. You use the tags up, and the fishery's over. So, and I gave y'all the handouts. Increasing accountability through online reporting to be more compatible with mobile devices and develop some incentives to use that. You know, we've been doing some pilot work and working with Ms. Iverson, who's been doing a great job to try to voluntarily increase electronic reporting. I do not understand why, for the life of me, the dealers can't be electronic reporting right now. We've been electronic reporting right here in Virginia in the federal fisheries for quite a few years. And in our SAFITS reporting program, there's more categories in crabs and crab information than I've ever seen in my life. So it's already there. That system is already there for any dealer. You can simply plug them in, and I would start with the dealers, but I really think we need some electronic reporting starting with the major crab buyers. And we want, number three, is better informed fisheries management, and we need to assess mortality and harvest rates related to feeder pot fishery, invasive predation, which I think last year was tremendous. We haven't seen quite as many fish this year yet in the bay, but I think it's a little slower coming. And the recreational fishery, just to have a better idea of what that looks like. And we've had a call, a lot of discussion about the cost and benefits of the blue crab regulations, both present and potential future regulations, to assess the impacts on the industry as required by code. So I think we could really do some studies there to see what's really beneficial and what's not. And one of the most amazing things I learned in the crab panel was from Dr. Ward, a retired Memphis economist, that explained to us MSY, maximum sustainable yield. But what was amazing, that if you were to manage a fishery to make your watermen healthy and have a maximum sustainable yield financially, every time the financial MSY will create scientific MSY every time they match perfectly, because you can still have a tremendous crab biomass. There's nothing wrong with rebuilding the crab biomass in the state of Virginia where there's plenty of crabs, but restricting harvest so much that the fishery still retains dockside value. We've done it in the scallop business. There's nothing wrong with that. We're getting the highest prices this past year we ever got in the history of the fishery. And it's very restrictive. Everybody knows it's sustainable. We've been given a MSC certification for sustainability worldwide. So the fishery has tremendous biomass. There's a lot of interested buyers, and they're somewhat competing because the known amount of product is a known thing. If there's 40 million pounds of scallops to be caught, the buyers are actually rolling their sleeves up saying, boy, really, really going to have to compete and get our share of the 40 million pounds. So there's nothing wrong with having huge biomass in such a restrictive fishery that the watermen do well. Their catch rate is high. They need less gear, less time on the water, but their economic return can be great. And it produces, like I said, if you produce an economic maximum sustainable yield for a full-time crab potter, you'd end up with scientific at maximum sustainable yield at the exact same time. The scientific side would happen automatically.
Interesting.
Any questions?
Mr. Tackard.
Yeah, if I'm catching what you're saying, one of the gists of what you're saying, though, it makes a lot of sense. Best winter protection is money in the bank, is one of my nursery friends has said to me. So what you're saying is that the front side of the season should be where we're pushing more of our effort, trying to make sure these females, when they're coming out, they got a chance as opposed to...
I would think it would be common sense, sir. I mean, y'all have talked about winter crab kill, and we know it can exist. We knew that from crab dredging, particularly in hard bottom. The crabs get washed out of the bottom, and the bottom's too tight. They can't get back in, and it kills them.
Right.
And, you know, you can put some crabs away in November by laying off the fishery, but there's no written guarantee they're actually going to still be there that spring, depending on the overwintering conditions. that spring, if we know historically that we're catching Cushing crabs, that the catch is primarily all Cushing crabs, and if those Cushing crabs weren't caught and left in the bay, that they may actually have those babies rub off, those 2 million, just look at your chances. So I'm just saying there's a risk factor here, and if you look historically at the chart, what's been offered by the stockbroker in the past hadn't paid off yet. Like I say, it's a bad investment.
Okay. You mentioned the tag program. So a tag program would be such that every buoy out there would have a tag on it, a sort of a state-certified tag.
Yes, and there's several ways to do that. You could have a metal ring. You could have it on the buoy, or you could have a lobster pot, similar tag. I wish I'd have brought some with me that could actually go on the pot itself.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's quite a few different systems for tagging, and I'd be glad to research some of those and forge all the information, particularly the lobster gears worked on a federal level offshore very successfully.
Yeah, I'll note that staff looked at this issue several years ago, and a crab pot tagging system for Virginia was estimated at the time to cost about $250,000. This was in the midst of the budget meltdown. And the economic meltdown, it was in a viable situation.
I don't think the state should pay for it. I think the harvester should.
I think Ms. Morrison may disagree. Anyone else from the commission? Questions for Mr. Moss?
Thank you,
Billy, very much.
Thank you for your time, and good luck in working on this crab issue because it's hard for all of us. And all of us want the same thing. The watermen want a resource. We want sustainability, and it's exactly what you guys want, and it's exactly what Rob and his staff want. So I just want to thank everybody for the ability to keep working together. And all of y'all have been great to us, and we appreciate the opportunity to work with y'all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak on this issue? Chief. Ms. Merrill spoke about stock biomass. You want to kind of explain a little bit along those lines what the concept is with what staff is looking at this point?
Well, I'll start with the beginning here, that where we don't have any control as managers, just to remind you that, you know, after larvae, zoe are really advected out onto the shelf, out a great distance, stay out there for quite a while, up to a couple months maybe. Then the current prevailing currents, winds, everything else really determine those zero pluses, those recruits I showed you. That's a large part of what goes on with blue crab. Then everyone you hear today steps in and tries to make the best they can out of either good, average, or poor situation. Right now it's a poor situation. We know from the information from the past that we can't necessarily sustain biomass just by our management actions. Matter of fact, everyone's talked about that today. There was a 34% reduction in harvest, but by 2009, 10, and 11, there was an increase in harvest. The 34% no longer was there. They actually had an increase in harvest for 3 years. Then, 2012, 2013, the harvest goes down. Now we're getting back to where we started out. I think that was the point that Mr. Close was trying to make. But there were benefits in the meantime because the abundance increased, because the biomass increased. There is not a very tight stock recruitment relationship. There is a significant relationship, but it probably, if I can do this, looks something like that. So that you don't have any guarantee that just because you have more spawning crabs that you get more recruits. I'm using my finger diagrams. But nonetheless, managers are supposed to hedge on the spawning stock conservation. And I think that's what we're trying to do right now. What I worry about is those who don't understand that we're not in this alone. We've got Maryland and we've got PRSC. When you get out in front sometimes, it might be a good thing. And if the commission, by the time of the public hearing, has other options to do that, then that's something to talk about. But clearly, you saw that recruitment is better. The juveniles are better. And so we never purposely, as managers, have tried to enact conservation of those juveniles. And if you do this on a bay-wide approach, I talked to the Potomac River Fisheries Commission today, Martin Gary, and they're talking about a closure in November. There are some female crabs there when they close. Those are familiar with the Potomac River. Maryland closes November 10th, but truly most of their female run has already run away to Virginia by late October. But everything's intertwined, so you have that problem. For all those who want to progress in one step, it's not going to happen that way. You know, we have to start somewhere, and I think we start with trying to augment the biomass. I'll say that again next month. I think some of these other ideas are very good. We had a crab management advisory committee, and as I mentioned, if they can stick to it, if individuals can stick to moving forward with ideas, whether it be on the peeler fishery, whether it be on sponge crabs, you know, whatever those issues might be, staff will help provide the information. But it is something, it is definitely a long-term approach. But for right now, we ought to think of 2015, because I think that these are, given the bay-wide situation, I think these are probably good options to take out to public hearing.
Any questions, any issues, any thoughts from the commission? Rob, will you go over the staff recommendation one last time, please?
Yes. I think I have to go back a slide. So staff requests an advertisement for a June public hearing of options that will reduce female crab harvest by at least 10%, and I should add in there, from 2013 harvest. In order to conserve female crabs and promote an increase in spawning potential in both 2014 and 2015. Staff also requests an advertisement of a CMAQ alternative to the proposed November 16 to 13 closure on the harvest of female crabs. And this alternative would be to reduce bushel limits during that two-week period by 50%. In November of 2014. For any of these options or alternatives that you're going to see below, the reduction in harvest of female crabs shall be no less than 10% of the 2013 female harvested crabs, and you can see that that equals 1.3 million pounds. So these are the options. A lot of reading. You ready?
Yep.
So staff recommends, again, that the current bushel limits, those that are in place today, be lowered to account for most of the 10% reduction. Number one is to lower current bushel limits in two steps, with one bushel limit established from July 5, 2014 through November 15, 2014, and March 17, 2015 through July 4, 2015. This achieves the 10% reduction in female crab harvest. Secondly, lower current bushel limits from July 5, 2014 through July 4, 2015, but as in the first option right here, there would be a prohibition on the harvest of female crabs only from November 16 through November 30, 2014. This achieves a 10% reduction. Third, lower current bushel limits from July 5, 2014 through July 4th, 2015, but female crab harvest would continue through November 30th. There would be no closure. However, bushel limits from November 16th to November 30th would be one-half of the current bushel limits that stand today. This achieves a 10% reduction. Also, lower current bushel limits from July 5, 2014 through July 4, 2015, with no November 2014 closure to female crabs, or even a halving of bushel limits in November, but instead the female crab harvest would continue to November 30th, as would the male harvest in these options, all these options. However, bushel limits from March 17th through March 31st, 2015, would be halved as compared to current bushel limits, and this achieves a 10% reduction in female harvest from 2013. Staff also recommends there be no reopening of the 2014-15 winter crab dredge fishery season, and also staff recommends there be no season extension for crab pots through December 15th, as in the previous two seasons.
Thank you very much. Matters before the commission. Dr. Neal?
I move we approve the public notice, to take it to public notice for next month. So that's the basic motion.
With these options?
Yeah, with the options we have now, although I'm very impressed with the work the commercial watermen and their thoughts on all this.
Okay. Well, that's the motion. Is there a second?
Is there a question?
Oh, Mr. Erskine.
I'll second it for discussion, but I was wondering if we would need to have in that motion something added to this that would say other management, you know, measures as necessary, or would it limit us to only these management measures?
I think you should put it in if you want.
I think we have something, if I may. Right here.
Yeah, alternatives based on those listed options below. But what if those options below don't involve something that this commission wants to do?
This could be any. I think the 10% is valuable because that's what we're going forward with, so we could just add something about any other options, management options, that would achieve the 10% reduction in female harvest from 2013. Is that okay. What you're...
Well, that would just because it's a public notice, if you were to limit it to that, then the 10% reduction would be all that the commission could lawfully consider in its regs. I think Mr. Erskine is really asking, what if there are other management options that include a different goal? Do I understand you right, sir?
I wasn't necessarily indicating that a different goal from 10% reduction. I have my own questions about that, I guess. But
other options, pardon me, than the changes we have here.
Right, correct.
We have here. And
correct.
So I think that just could be placed in the notice.
Okay.
And again, the 10% is something that we are promoting forward. So I think that can be added if the commission wants to, you know.
Yeah, it should be.
Is that friendly?
Yes, I think it would be good. I'd like to have our hands tied as least as possible.
Wait a minute, Dr. Neal. Mr. Erskine is asking whether or not you will accept his suggestion.
Well, I said absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Great. Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't hear you.
There. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Tanker?
I liked the presentation we heard from the Blue Crab industry panel member, and I'm wondering, do we want to consider putting any of those things into this advertised? In particular, what I thought was interesting and we ought to be talking about is the waiting list, number 5, on his initial recommendations to VMRC. People without harvest for 2004-7 to 2007, and the use of agents, number 6. I mean, I think these are sore spots for us long term.
I'll reply on the waiting list. So that's currently in the regulation.
It's currently in the regulation.
And we do have to hit, well, we do have to, the stock has to achieve that target for 3 consecutive years.
Okay.
That's already established. There are probably 230 individuals on the waiting list right now, somewhere around there.
Right.
And the next one that you talked about was
number
the
6.
Agents.
I know we've worked on this at different times.
We have, and this has been a long-standing crab management advisory committee issue as well. And it finally came down to, in 2013, it was decided that if you'd had an agent in 2012, or even if you transferred your license by 2013, those were the ones that could be agents. It seems to be working. There's 164, I think, as a cap that could be agents. We have not achieved that level this year. As a matter of fact, I think probably it's in the 130s. So those are, you know, those items are definitely something that need to be looked at. I think overall, from knowing what some on CMAQ, and not to speak for anyone else, but I think some of the issues today are about allocation, Baywide allocation, which we're slowly trying to figure out how to do that. They're about excess effort and trying to do something there. They're about latent effort. You know, there are a lot of challenges before the fishery can be streamlined enough that when you have co-management, true co-management, it's going to take streamlining. And there's a lot of problems that were mentioned today about fishing too many pots, you know, all sorts of excess that in order to have a fishery that can really truly fluctuate with bushel limits the way it really should, it has to be a situation where the commission goes that hard route that they've gone for other fisheries of really limited entry and using criteria. And that's part of what the industry panel talked about as well, but they didn't have anything specific right now for the limitations. So I hope I addressed your...
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll just note here that the recommendations from the industry panel here, some of them are very intriguing. Some of them are a bit enticing. These are all, to my mind, a little bit longer term and are not necessarily excluded from what we're looking at doing in the short term. I think these are some ideas here that deserve to be worked on more and fleshed out a little bit more and maybe put together a detailed proposal for the commission to look at down the road here on enacting some of these. And I understand the panel has been working very diligently now for the last couple of years, and this is, to my knowledge, in the first of all, hard and fast recommendations that are more longer range in vision. I applaud the work that's been done.
And I agree with that.
Which leaves us with a motion on the table to advertise for a public hearing next month with these options and any others to achieve the 10% harvest reduction.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion on that? Well, call a question here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much.